A new year, time for new growth. Grow your education and skills with Herzing University. Our online behavioral health programs fit your schedule and time. From an 8-month diploma program in health and human services to a 36-month bachelor's in psychology. Grow your behavioral health career with us wherever you are in your education. Your future starts now at Herzing University. Visit us online at herzing.edu or text health to 85109. Online at herzing.edu or text health to 85109.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Live from a bunker in the heart of the Ozarks, a podcast that didn't realize we could go on top secret government missions just by asking nicely, it's SIFPOP. Welcome to SIFPOP Weekly, streaming live most Fridays, are available to download later in your podcast feed, unless, of course, you're a patron.
Patrons get perks!
Patrons get those perks!
Roar.
I'm your host, Aaron Dicer, and this is how he's hoping to spend his golden years. It's Andrew Ormsby, ladies and gentlemen.
Ahoy.
And each week we'll chat about movies, TV, and whatever else from the pop culture universe is on our minds. And please welcome our guest this week. She'd just like you to stop making sex jokes about her recently deceased grandmother. It's Alice.
Woo! G'day, g'day, g'day. I mean, that's a fair thing to ask, I feel.
I agree, which is what made it so funny to me. All right, we have got Godzilla Kong that we're going to talk about. The director has specifically said the X is silent. So,
did he really?
Yes, it's Godzilla Kong, the new empire.
I've been reading it as Italians do, which is Godzilla per Kong, which is Godzilla for Kong. Which is nice.
I refuse to change. I'm just going to keep calling it Godzilla Twitter Kong, just because I hate change. The new empire. And then we'll also talk about Ghostbusters Frozen Empire. So many empires. Which is why our best ever challenge will be to rank the five movies that have the word empire in their title.
And somebody hasn't seen five. I've seen four, so
I am gonna need some grace with this one.
Grace is always, this is one of those situations where it was like, I know the pool is shallow, like I understand.
Beyond kiddie pool. This is a puddle.
Yes. Your shoes won't get wet beyond the sole of the shoe. Like, I know this is a very shallow topic. However, when you have two movies that both have the word empire in the title, you gotta have some fun. So, you know, and there are at least a couple to talk about. And I have seen six. So I've seen seven, but I've got five plus an honorable mention.
Aaron's will be the only full list that actually makes sense. I really tossed up different ways in which I can make it work. And I think I landed on what I thought was the funniest way. So
I like it. I like it a lot. I'm excited to see where we go. We'll also do some buried treasure as well, of course, as we do at the end of every episode. No reason to dilly and or dally. Let's get right into it. We'll kick it off with Godzilla Twitter Kong, the new empire.
For most of human civilization, we believed that life could only exist on the surface of our planet. What else were we wrong about?
Following their explosive showdown, Godzilla and Kong must reunite against a colossal undiscovered threat hidden within our world, challenging their very existence and our own. We continue into the, what do we call, is there
Monsterverse.
Monsterverse? Yeah. Monarch verse. I don't know what to call it. Is the show Monarch part of the Monster verse? It seems like it is. It has some of the same characters and stuff. So yeah, we continue in with a new one. And this time Godzilla isn't versing Kong. Godzilla is uniting with Kong. And so we'll see how all that goes. Dan Stevens, Rebecca Hall, Brian Tyree Henry, coming back as well. What did you guys think of Godzilla X Kong, the new empire? Did you like it, love it, dislike it, hate it, or it was just okay? Ormsby.
Did not like it.
Now, I shall say, before we get to Alice's reaction, Ormsby is the expert. No matter what Alice or I say today, you should believe Andrew Ormsby about a Godzilla movie. He is the one that you should believe. Alice, did you like it, love it, dislike it, hate it, or was just okay?
I've seen a few. Excuse me. I went to film
school. Matter. Doesn't matter.
I had to watch the original.
Ormsby's the expert.
Okay, that's fair enough. I also, I think I landed on like high side of did not like it. Low side of it was okay. So let's go low side of it was okay. Just
low side of it was okay because, for Alice. Yeah. Andrew has now pulled his bona fides off the shelf. So he can prove
it's legitimate.
And he can prove that he is the Godzilla guy. He has items within reach. That is kind of one of the fandom proofs. Like if you were to like, what are you a fandom of? I'd be like Pixar. You'd be like, really? I'd be like, look behind me. I've got several things I could grab, you know, like that's kind of one of those things. Guys, I liked this movie. So I'm going to go first. However, I'm on the low side of liked it. And I will start by saying, when you guys get into your negatives for this movie, I will be right there with you. I agree. I totally understand what you will be talking about and agree wholeheartedly with the negatives you had with this movie. I think I realized about halfway through that just because I've never liked the phrase turn off your brain, right? Like turn off your brain to enjoy a movie, just turn off your brain, have a good time, that kind of thing. That it does speak to something that I do think is valuable, which is not to turn off your brain, but find a different wavelength within your brain. And I think there is something about modern, schlocky, beat-em-up, big noisy movies that exist on a different wavelength than a lot of movies have before. It's not like... It's a fairly recent development to have this many of these movies. I was trying to go back in my brain to what movie I would describe as, you know, one of the first to just be like big, audacious, dumb fun. And I thought of like
Fast and Furious.
I thought of Fast Five as maybe kind of an entry into a different kind of filmmaking, but I think it may have been Transformers. Was Transformers before Fast Five?
Yeah.
I think the original Transformers is kind of where I landed. I originally went back to stuff like, you know, Jaws and Jurassic Park, and I'm going, no, those are totally different. You
watch those are really good.
Yeah. No, you're right. They're good in a classic. Yeah, there's substance there. They're good in a classic
story and character development.
Yes, exactly. and it understands things that these movies don't care to understand, right? Like these movies, you know, tend to find their way.
I'd also say some of the action films from the 80s probably fall in. Like the Arnie, you know, like your Predator. I don't know.
Predators... You say that, but Predator, Terminator, all those, they have substance.
Yeah, they also have substance.
They do. I just think there was a switch that was flipped at some point where it was like, nothing has to really make sense. Like, nothing has to make sense. There are so many things in this movie that don't make sense. Like, decisions that are made, you know, whatever's happening. Here's the issue,
that's
going
to be a phrase that's said a lot this episode.
here's the issue, though. I had a lot of fun. I just, there is a level at which you allow yourself to get distracted by the nonsense. And I totally get it. I myself am distracted by the nonsense at a certain level. And even maybe this movie on a different day would have distracted me by its nonsense enough that I couldn't have a good time. But it didn't when I watched it this time. I enjoyed the silliness of it. I enjoyed the way it made these kaiju and these characters and the Kongs made them you know, like WWE characters almost. Like there's a real
suplex.
There's like
how does suplex?
But that's what I'm saying.
That's not a natural part of body movement.
No, but I'm not even saying like the gymnastics of it. I'm saying the personality of it. Like they gave these characters like overstated, over the top, like wrestling persona characters. Like when The Rock gets in a ring, he's a different person, you know, like when you know, Hulk Hogan got in the ring, he was a different person. And like, there is that element to what they're doing with these characters that I don't know. I had a good time, and there was enough simplification of the human side of this, which was a real problem I had with Kong, Godzilla versus Kong, was how weirdly complex and convoluted all the human relationships were and who was who and what they were doing. And there's a real simplification of this is our team of, you know, four or five people and here is what they were doing that just allowed me just to kind of sink in and kind of have a good time. And I love Dan Stevens. I'm just telling you right now, I just like Dan Stevens, everything I see him in, I'm just like, I just want to watch you do stuff. You're a lot of fun. He has
good charisma. I do really enjoy does. Dan Stevens. He is funny.
I was a little not taken aback or off put, but just a little surprised that they called out the reference. I mean, he's clearly Ace Ventura for Kaiju. Like, that's clearly the shtick he's doing, right?
Even
like,
has not sure.
It's I was going to say, shirt, everyone else is like in like military gear, and then he's just decided. I'm like, all I could think about was like, but you know you're going into alien territory, essentially. You would want your arms covered. I'd want, like, everything, you know, just in case I brush up against some poison ivy that's going to cause me to grow moss all over my body, you know, like...
Mosquitoes need it more than I do.
I was... Oh my I love that. No. I thought that was adorable. Anyways.
As someone who gets, like, who is a weird magnet for mosquitoes, that was... I felt personally attacked. I did not need that much focus on a mosquito. Not to mention, can I just say, I don't know if that's a spoiler or not. I have a deep, deep phobia of one of the things in this movie. I will say it's probably the nicest depiction. I'm just going to put in the chat for your guys' reference. I have a deep phobia of these.
Oh. And
so... I will say it was a nice depiction, but it's just a whole thing every time one shows up on screen. So that between and the mosquito and
there was one very big that, one. There was one very big one that played quite a role in the movie.
The fact that like it's fine if there's one and mosquitoes. That's but they had both. They had both. I didn't need to know that much about insects in the
this movie is attracted to insects like something towards a flame. I can't remember. There's a phrase, anyways. I found myself having a good time. I found myself enjoying all that stuff. Just to finish the thought, you know, I was already wondering when Dan Stevens was going to bend over and talk out of his butt. Like, I was already wondering, like, when he was going to go full Ace Ventura. And then the movie mentioned it. Like, I had already thought, you know, oh, this is Ace Ventura in the movie. Like, somebody insults him as, like, a, you know, Ace Ventura or whatever. And I was like, oh, well, now you're just saying the thing. I kept thinking,
when else has he been called to do his Titan veterinary work? Like, it's like, when has Godzilla been like, hey, I've got a cold, or like, I'm just like, how do you study that? Do you just wait for them to die? Do you just like, is it a faraway study? Like, I have so many questions.
Well, the world does seem very, very advanced in the Titan exploration and identification and tracking, and I do feel like we missed a lot of technological development towards where we are now somehow, and how the world just knows where all the Titans are. And did I miss that in a previous movie, or are they just, it's just now it's that way and it wasn't before?
Well, here's, I feel like in the credits, they're just like, more of being found.
Yeah, exactly.
That and the Monsterverse is one of those weird universes where you have to watch the movies, watch the TV shows, read the comics, all this stuff to get the full depiction of everything, as opposed to, you know, just a one-stop shop being a movie series. kind of how, you know, everybody was complaining about the MCU turning in. You got to watch all the TV shows to understand everything. Kind of what's happening here with the MonsterVerse. And they're only, what, six movies in? And they're already falling into this trap?
Yeah. So all that to say, I had a fun time. I thought that the development of the world building allowed for them just to play. I felt like I felt like all the toys had been taken out of the toy box now and they could just play. And I found that fun and intoxicating, you know, and there's like, oh, Godzilla is going to fight this other Titan because he wants to become the Pink Power Ranger. Like, I was like, cool, like, let's go. Like, I want to see this fight and what happens. So I enjoyed myself, despite being very aware that this is not a movie that stands up to even the slightest rigor of attention towards logic or, you know, anything. So, what positive did you, do you guys have anything positive to say about it? Alice, yeah. You were kind of next on the list. Yeah. You said it was the low side or just okay.
Well, I think Mini Kong was cute. Like, you know, that was a cute little character. And obviously, I think they knew that, which is why he was all over the trailers. But
you're ready for that.
I will also.
Yeah, I was going to say, it's Baby Yoda all over again.
Yeah. And what I did enjoy, and something I actively even turned to my friends and said, was the fact that during the Apes Together Strong scenes, the fact that there was no translation for us. Mm-hmm. So during all those ape scenes where, you know, Kong is like meeting all of them and all of that sort of stuff, there wasn't any sign language or anything like that going on. We just had to watch what was happening on screen and kind of deduce for ourselves, like the different, you know, what was happening, how things were being affected, what the power structure was. Even with the relationship between Kong and Mini Kong, like all of that and the way in which it kind of goes about and the way in which that trust is developed, it's all just happening with them. And there isn't like, they didn't force a human to like hang out with Kong and be like, what? He's trying to be friends with you. Or like, oh, this is what's happening. You know, it was just on screen. And I really appreciated that because that felt, that was interesting to me. And that was, and I like how, well, it seems like they're kind of trying to keep them as animals, quote unquote, but obviously with very clear motivations that go beyond what the animal motivations would be. But like those elements, at least I'm like, this feels like something as part of nature. And that was interesting to me. So I thought that was cool. And I would have liked it if it had been more of that. Like, I feel like the humans are just there so that there are humans. Like, I'm just kind of like over it.
I had the same thought. And my brain went to the place of, what if you had decided to make this movie completely from Kong's perspective? And you can have the human characters, you can have them in there occasionally or whatever, but there's enough of like non-dialogue cool stuff going on here without them that I was like, okay, maybe we don't need them. But when the human characters would speak, it would sound like gibberish to Kong. So like there's no English or subtitles or anything. Like it's literally from Kong's perspective. And the only thing the subtitles pop up for is when he's talking to the girl and he can understand, you know, what she's saying or, you know, whatever. Mm. I thought that might be interesting. I don't know that it would work, but it was a thought I had.
I mean, it's not like any of the lines humans said this movie were of any substance or use or good. So, you know, I'd be open to it.
I just remember and Andrew will go to some of your thoughts next. But I remembered the moment where I decided to like this movie and have a good time. And it's primarily because it was the kind of moment that I would usually roll my eyes at or whatever. And I just kind of smiled instead. And I was like, oh, that's interesting. Why am I smiling at that instead of rolling my eyes at that? But it was the moment when they're getting ready to go down to Middle Earth. I don't, what's it called? It's not
Hollow Earth.
Hollow Earth.
But now it's Middle Earth because there's a lower Earth below it.
Yeah, well, that was the subterranean Earth, which also makes no sense because Hollow Earth is also subterranean. So
it's now Lower Earth, Middle Earth, and Upper Earth. Okay, that's all it is. Anyways, it's the moment when they're getting ready to go in there, and her daughter and Dan Stevens come walking around the corner in their helicopter gear in slow motion, like walking down the hallway, like it's the coolest thing that's ever been done.
Do do do.
like moment. Yeah.
And I'm like, okay. and in general, my eyes are going to roll really far back in my head. And instead, I'm just kind of grinning. I'm like, yeah, I guess I've found some kind of wavelength here where I'm just like, go ahead, be that movie. That's fine. Whatever. Like, I'm having a good time. Like, it's okay. Like, it was weird. Or, you know, when Kong takes his new piece of armor and, you know, launches it towards the sky, you know, fist to the sky, like that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. Is just, it's all eye rolly, but I don't know. I kind of was grinning, you know, for a lot of it. But Andrew, some thoughts from you.
Well, on the positive side, I think that Rebecca Hall is a very good actress. And I think that she was acting very well in this movie here, too. I actually did buy into her whole, her character's name's Eileen and the daughter's name is Jay. I bought into that relationship. And then, you know, there were some friction there towards the end where they didn't know what was going to happen. And she was going for some emotional beats and I totally bought into it. So good on you, Rebecca Hall.
Is that now your positive, Andrew?
Now for the negatives. Here, and if you guys see me going on a tirade for a while, then just cut me off, please.
No, go for it. Listen, this is your moment to shine. This is what it's all been leading to.
I have two major complaints with this movie that deal with the franchise as a whole. So they're about the movie, but it's about the MonsterVerse in general. So the first one is I hate a lack of consistency across a franchise. So in the 2014 original Godzilla film, these Titans were large, slow lumbering tanks that whenever they would move, you would feel the weight of it just like an actual animal would. You know, the larger the animal is, the slower it moves. And that really helped with the scale of everything. Now you have Godzilla and King Kong doing pirouettes and, you know, doing perfect dives into the water and everything. And
suplexes.
And suplexes. And all the action scenes, they're happening as if these characters were human-sized. Like, they're, like, throwing a really quick punch and everything. I'm like, no, with a Titan, it's going to be slow, but you would feel that inertia coming when it's slower. And, yeah, that's the kind of thing that really bugs me, is a lack of consistency across a franchise. And my other negative is that this is a nothing film. Absolutely nothing. It doesn't add anything to the MonsterVerse as a whole. The characters Eileen and Jai, or Jay, are the ones that I would point to and say that you could say that that's what you can say the movie's about. It's about, you know, relationships and changing, but really the story and the motivation should be about around these kaiju. And that's what I felt was wrong with this one. Because you go back to the first Godzilla movie, 2014, it's introducing the world to the existence of kaiju. That is the purpose of that film. Then you go to Kong Skull Island. There, it introduces the idea of Hollow Earth. Then you go on to Godzilla versus Kong.
King of Monsters.
Yeah, King of Monsters. Sorry, yeah. That was Godzilla, but it was reintroducing old kaiju from old franchises that we love from like the 60s and 70s. Then it was Godzilla versus Kong. And again, that was the combining of those two worlds to where it really felt like a big franchise. Here, I don't know what this is saying or wanting to do or to add to this universe. Does that make any sense, or am I just rambling?
No,
here?
I think I understand what you're saying, and I think I kind of brushed on the positive aspect of that, which is I phrased it as all the toys are out of the toy box already. It's time to play. Mm. Like, there's nothing. There are no new toys to bring out. You know, let's have some fun. I mean, so the subterranean thing, the subterranean thing. You know, that's new to this movie, right? And that, you know, the idea, because I think to me the clear
one.
The clear thematic underpinning to this, what this is doing thematically, is about finding your people. It's about not being alone, right? Like Kong and Jay both are on the same journey, which is, I feel alone. I don't feel completely at home. Like, where are my people? And In both cases, they have to figure out how they are different than where they came from, and also how they relate to where they came from. So, like, the movie is doing
it's
some
apes together strong.
Yes,
it's that the film, but on two sides. But
yeah.
What I will say is that my major annoyance actually has to do with the marketing, because the posters and the trailers, like, fully just show Godzilla's power up and Kong's mecha hand in the poster, and also who they're fighting. And so I'm just like, oh. So when it happens, it's like this huge lead up to it happening, and then I already know what's going. I'm just wait the whole movie. I was just waiting for Kong to get his mecha glove, and then I was just waiting for Godzilla to become pink. And then it all kind of, and this is something I've had a problem with the other films as well. There's like a giant 20-minute climax, and then the movie ends. And I'm just like, what? Like, it feels like whiplash. And this one has it, I think, in particular, where it's like this huge buildup, 20 minutes end. And I'm just like, hello? What?
I'm so trailer? Ready for movie. I'm so ready for movies to end like that again, rather than spending 20 minutes, you know, resolving every single character's everything.
I just remember the end of Predator. The nuke goes off, you see Arnold, and then it's over.
Yep. That's how most movies used to end like that. Like, you know, like the climax happened and then it was over. The movie was over. Anyways, I will say, beyond the ending of the movie, you know, the expectations and, you know, what's in the poster and what's in the trailer or whatever is not, a in my opinion, something to take the movie down for. It's something to take maybe the marketing team down for.
And this, it's something, is more a comment on marketing teams.
Yeah, and it's something to take society down for. It's us, like, it's to take us down for, like, like being susceptible to these things, like being susceptible, so that they know, hey, we got to put all the big stuff, you know, in there to get, you know, butts in seats, and then, you know, who cares if, you know, if we give stuff away from the movie or whatever. This is not a new you know, soapbox that I'm standing on. The soapbox is very worn and old, and, you know, the wood is creaking.
Well, then I will say a negative from the film then, which is, as an Italian, can we please stop destroying important historical things? And it's fine, you know what, it really is fine if you want to destroy like one big thing, but they do it with like four big things in this film, like four important monuments, one of which is so ancient. And I couldn't focus. Maybe this just means I'm like, I'm too much of an adult now, and all I'm thinking about is the collateral damage. But I'm like watching the big sort of in between fight, and I was just literally watching the damage and the destruction happening to these important pieces of history. And I'm just like, ah, no, what are you doing? Just, you have an entire hollow earth to fight in that's just mountains and rocks. Stop destroying. Like, again, I totally get it if you want to destroy like one city and then completely like take down one iconic monument or anything, but 4 to 5, that's so many. And that's all I could focus on. Like, Meanwhile, just go into the hollow earth, destroy mountains. That's fine.
Meanwhile, Godzilla's walking through a populated bridge with like dozens of cars just flying everywhere.
I know.
People are dying by the hundreds in this movie. And Alice is like, save the Colosseum, save the Colosseum.
It was the pyramids. Oh, they really got me. I was like, no, it's the pyramids. But also, that's true. I'm like, if you're living in this world where you know there's titans, as if you'd ever go on a bridge ever again. Like, I would literally never cross a bridge again. It would just never happen. Or if you saw one, you'd see him coming from the distance. Like, I'd just be like, nope, not leaving my house today.
And I don't know, man. Talk to the people of Baltimore. Wasn't it just Baltimore that boat ran into that bridge and it just crumbled?
Oh, yeah.
Like bridges do come down occasionally, but not from Godzilla. You're right there.
Anyway,
nope.
So that's just my thing. Tankers. And I think it just might be because I'm just too much of an adult now. now. Like, I have too much of like a adulty brain to just not be completely distracted by the fact that this important piece, also because I'm a massive history nerd, and specifically when it comes to ancient societies. And so just seeing the pyramids be treated that way was very distracting. It was so distracting.
It's wild. I just heard somebody say the other day that the pyramids, the taller of the pyramids, was the tallest human-built structure on the planet for over three millennium. That's insane.
Yep. Like, and you know, they used it for a bit in the film.
So me personally, I was more concerned about the human lives that were dying. But yeah, go ahead. Care for the old buildings. I get it. I get it.
Humans come and go. There's only one Colosseum.
That's right. That's fair. I did find that Colosseum as a bed gag really funny. I thought that was hilarious.
I did enjoy that. I was like, he kind of looks like a dog when it
Like a cat or a dog. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Let's see. Andrew, did you have any further thoughts?
No post-credit scene, which is actually really inconsistent. Surprising. Yeah, inconsistent with the Monsterverse. Here's maybe why possibly I didn't jive with this movie as well as, you know, I possibly could have. I'm looking at Godzilla Minus One and seeing how amazing that movie was. And then to come into this one, it's just like, I know the potential that this franchise has, and I don't want, no offense, Aaron, but I don't want to see this to go the route of the Fast and the Furious, where it's just an action grab, turn your brain off kind of a movie. I think that these movies can say something, and I think that the visuals, which, by the way, I was not blown away by any of the visuals in this one, which I can look at every movie that came before, especially Kong Skull Island, and pick out like picture frames and like, oh, I could blow that up and that could be a poster in my room. You know, I didn't really get that in this movie.
Oh, there are certainly a couple poster moments. There's the slow motion jumping off the, their kaiju, like when they have like the, it's almost like a, it was almost like a joust Ultron, where they were coming at each other and then they slow-mo jump off their respective kaiju. That was pretty cool. I did notice a few visual things. I knew there wasn't going to be a post-credit scene when the theater turned the lights all the way on as soon as the credits started.
They're like, leave, get out.
There is nothing more to come. We want to clean.
I never trust that, though.
Hint, hint, hint.
This is since the very first not the 54 Godzilla, the 2014, that these are original villains. These are not franchise like King Ghidorah or Mothra or Rodan or any
how did you feel about that addition as a longtime fan, Andrew, to the lore?
I thought that the two new kaiju that were introduced were sufficient. I mean, there wasn't really much given to them. Well, there for one of them, they kind of gave some backstory. The other one was kind of just there, I felt. But they look cool, and they smashed a bunch of stuff. I guess that's even though I want more from the franchise, they did what they were designed to do.
Right. They knew the assignment at least a little bit.
Yeah.
Alice, any final thoughts?
It's ironic that an orangutan was picked as the bad guy because they're actually the nicest of the apes. And so I want some equality for orangutans in future films. They can be good guys too, because in real life, they're the nice ones, which is why they're the most endangered. So
we all love Maurice.
Well, true equality is when they can be both villains and heroes. That's true equality. Yeah.
My actual one last thing it was just like something I thought when I was like, orangutans are fun. My actual one last thing is I agree that yes, it was so I should mention I had only seen Godzilla and Kong Skull Island up until Tuesday of this week, and then you were like, we're doing Godzilla and Ghostbusters, so then I had to watch ahead of time all of the movies after that and then go see this one. So my brain is so full of Godzilla and Kong right now. And so I would say, like, while, yes, there are, I think the best part of these movies are the monster fight moments, but I just want there to be a little bit more emotional weight behind them. So I think kind of like, I think I'm in between you two, where it's like, I do really enjoy just monsters punching each other, because who doesn't? Like, that's a bit of a lizard brain thing, I feel, where you're just like, that's fun to watch. But I do enjoy it more when there is something there, when there's some emotion. And I do feel like the first Godzilla got it the best, like it got it the most right in that case. And so I think if they could just move away from the Transformers of it all and back towards like emotion and substance, then that would be cool.
I think this had more substance than the last one, if I'm being honest. I think that thematic stuff about finding your tribe is deeper than anything the last one had to offer, unless I'm forgetting something, which is very possible.
No. Oh, yeah. I mean, I fell asleep in the last one like four times when I was desperately trying to watch. I fell asleep during the climax in Godzilla vs. Kong.
Fair enough.
Did you watch the Monarch show?
No, I haven't. I actually want to see it. Now that I've actually caught up, I do want to watch it.
It's my favorite MonsterVerse thing, actually. I really enjoyed season one.
I've heard it's really good. It's on my list, but I physically couldn't get to it and watch all of these and Ghostbusters Afterlife and Ghostbusters Frozen Empire.
Oh, I was just curious. I wasn't asking if you did your homework. No, that was me.
It's a new segment on Sif Pop. Andrew judges the guest for not doing enough homework. No,
I will. I'm going to watch it.
You know, you bring up the orangutan thing, and it's interesting. I recently watched all of the Planet of the Apes movies, the old Planet of the Apes movies, and those movies get into some really sticky race metaphors because, you know, like the orangutans and the apes and the gorillas, like, are these three distinct races, and, you know, and they have, like, the orangutans are the scientists, and, you know, the apes are the warriors, and or the gorillas are the warriors, and, like, you know, and it's like one of those things you start watching it and go, I this feels a little icky to me. So that's what that made me think of. My final thing is, I don't think we've given enough time to how stupid this movie is. There's, you know, we said it, I think you know it, but there's just some. Let's just say one of the characters in this movie is controlled by remote control that's never explained and makes no sense to me whatsoever. Oh,
that annoyed me so much because it really annoys me when there's a very obvious thing and then the people who are fighting the person that has this obvious weakness don't go for it. And I'm just like, if you just do that, it's done. You've finished. It just annoyed me so much.
I just want to be clear. There is so much nonsense in this movie. Like, I don't want you going to this movie thinking, oh, Aaron said it was the thematic stuff was interesting and it was fun to watch. And then come away going, that movie was dumb. Why didn't he say it was dumb? I'm saying it now. It's dumb. This movie is dumb in many, many ways. Consider that the red flag. That is Godzilla Twitter Kong, the new empire. It is in theaters now. All right. Let's move on to our next review. Let's talk about Ghostbusters Frozen Empire.
You the weird guy who buys strange old things?
Correct on both counts.
Buddy, you just hit the jackpot.
What is it?
Better question is, what's inside of it?
The parables tell of an unimaginable evil commanding an army of ghosts. With the power to kill by fear itself.
Like, literally scared to death?
The Spengler family returns to where it all started, the iconic New York City firehouse, to team up with the original Ghostbusters, who've developed a top-secret research lab to take busting ghosts to the next level. But when the discovery of an ancient artifact unleashes an evil force, what? That's never happened in a Ghostbusters movie. Ghostbusters new and old must join forces to protect their home and save the world from a second ice age. This is, of course, follows Ghostbusters Afterlife in the the Bustaverse. I don't know. That sounds like something I'm commanding a rapper to do. Bustaverse.
Ghostverse?
So what did you guys think of Ghostbusters Afterlife? It brings back pretty much everybody from the or Ghostbusters Frozen Empire brings back pretty much everybody from Afterlife. Alice, start us off. Did you like it, love it, dislike it, hate it, or it was just okay?
I really didn't like it.
Low side of didn't like it. Andrew?
I liked it. I should say really quick though, sorry. I had to watch Afterlife immediately because I hadn't seen it. And then I watched Frozen Empire. So whenever I'm reviewing today, there's a good possibility I might accidentally start reviewing Afterlife because I watched them literally back to back.
Yeah. I watched Afterlife and then the next day I saw Frozen Empire.
Well, I
Aaron, what'd you think?
I was taking some of my family to go see the movie and they hadn't seen Afterlife. So I also watched Afterlife right before I watched Frozen Empire. So we all have Afterlife fresh in our memory. I'm going to go with high side of okay. I'm going to go with high side of okay. Almost stretching into low side. Nope, I'm going with low side of liked it. I have changed my mind. I'm going with low side of liked it. I think that fits better for how I felt about this movie. For much similar reasons. Andrew, I'm going to let you start off. Tell us why Ghostbusters Frozen Empire is the best movie of the year.
Yeah, I think that McKenna Grave is amazing as Phoebe. She is the spitting, like she could be a true descendant of Harold Ramis, and I would totally believe it. Not only that, but her mannerisms and the way she carries herself, it's so believable. I absolutely adored that character. In Afterlife and in this one too.
Yeah, I completely agree. McKenna Grace is the best thing about these movies. It's wild to be in a movie with Paul Rudd and upstage him. Yeah. Like she, but she's so funny. There's a moment in the first movie and there's a callback to it early on in the second movie where she tells an amazing dumb joke, just an amazing dumb joke. And then she winks, but she somehow winks without moving any other muscle in her face. It's the funniest thing ever. I'm trying to do it now
and I can't.
Yeah.
I think she's just the best. She's great. I'll throw in that I don't think she's the only one that's great in these movies. I actually think the family has really good chemistry. I like these people together. I like Finn Wolfhard, McKenna Grace, Carrie Coon, and Paul Rudd as a foursome. I think they're really interesting and fun to watch, and I had a good time spending more time with them. As much as I think some of the family storylines are a little forced, I still enjoy hanging out with these guys. So yeah, that's something.
My only pushback on that is I think that Finn Wolfhard's character is not there. He's a their character. Like I don't see what he brings to the table really. He wants to drive.
He wants to drive.
An 18-year-old that wants to drive. I'm glad that they based a character around
that. He's the brother. That's what his point is for existing. It's because they needed four family members.
Yeah, he's about as useful as Casey Affleck was in Interstellar, you know?
Hey!
Alice, some thoughts.
Positives. I am really glad you guys liked this movie. I should also say, I have seen the first Ghostbusters film, obviously, but this was like well into me not being a child because it came out way before I was born. And then I watched it and I was like, that was fun. Didn't watch any of the other ones. Watched the 2016 one and now have watched these. That is my entire, like, I am not a Ghostbusters girly. I've not got the like affinity for the franchise.
I think you just missed Ghostbusters 2, right? That's the only one you haven't seen.
Is that the only one I've missed?
Yeah.
Oh, well, there's the TV shows and stuff too, right?
Oh, well, sure, but yeah.
Like, if you've seen then you're a French. Then you're definitely a fan.
Yeah, that's not connected stuff, really.
I didn't even know. But what I mean is I don't have that. So a big part of what this film, where I miss, and I think this is a me thing, and it's because I'm not maybe the targeted audience rather than necessarily film thing, which is this and also Afterlife have clearly so very many references that just go completely over my head. Like I note that there's a wink and that there's a reference. I just don't know what it's referencing or winking to. But so that is something I do want to call out because I'm very clearly not the target audience. Having said that, in that specific realm, like in the Ghostbusters realm, I enjoy fantasy films and family films and that sort of thing. There's a specific idea that is presented in this film, the specific storyline. And I enjoyed its presence. I'm trying to talk around spoilers. I just wish they'd committed to it stronger. I just wish that they'd fully committed to it existing rather than almost like danced around it and been subtle in the fact that it was like that. I think that's what the storyline was. But it felt very true to the characters that were involved. It felt like it could have been a really interesting story had they fully committed and made it more of like a love story, is what I'll say. I spent the whole time kind of wishing it kept developing and then it just didn't. So, but I enjoyed that it was kind of present.
Yeah, it introduced that and then almost immediately gave up on that notion.
Yeah.
A bit.
Yeah.
It's interesting. I didn't have that experience. Really? I had the experience of the possibilities, but I don't think the movie ever specifically was like, this is a direction we want to take this, or this is, or we're hinting at this thing. I didn't catch any like hints with the Phoebe character. Hints. Like I think the movie allows us to understand possibilities and those kind of things, but I never felt, it didn't feel like it was pulling punches. Let's just say that. Like, it didn't feel like it was doing something where it had this thing it wanted to do, but it just couldn't do it. It felt more to me like that's not what this is about. Like, you know, she's at that age where she's figuring a lot out. And so, you know, for it to be, the specific situation it was, I kind of think it was perfect. Because it also didn't do the thing where it made it something that it didn't have to be. Like where it put big flashing lights on it and, you know, put like a big, you know, neon sign about it. Like, it just let it be real to her experience. That was her experience in those moments. So I actually kind of liked how it handled that relationship. Because I've seen both mistakes made. I've seen the mistakes that I think are the clear mistakes of wink, wink, you know what's really going on here. Wink, wink, we're just not going to say it. Wink, wink. And I've also seen the, hey, everybody, look how progressive this is. Look at what's going on. You know, like, there are these extremes that can both distract from the story because they both feel pedantic in some way or another. And this just felt like a real human being having an experience where she probably was feeling some things, but it wasn't what it was about. And so it was just kind of allowed to exist as a normal part of her life, which is, you know, what it should be. It didn't feel like it needed the bells and whistles because it's just normal. It's just, you know.
I don't even think necessarily it's the bells and whistles. I just wish that had been, like, I think towards the end it becomes much more central to the story. I just wish that it was the center of the story the whole film. Like, I think that relationship, whatever form it takes, is such an interesting relationship that I don't think has really been explored previously in the Ghostbusters franchise. Because, like, I feel like the one thing that I'm always confused about when I watch Ghostbusters movies is, like, why, like, the ghosts, you know, some of them are dragons and then some of them are people. And I feel like that's an interesting thing to explore further. Why, like, is it that people sometimes become these weird muncher type Slimer things, or is it that, like, they're the ghosts of something else? And so, yeah, that was something I really wanted to explore further. I just wish that had been a storyline that was looked at and that it was more the focus, rather than, I feel like they were forcing these other characters and their storylines in as well, and just kind of then in a way to kind of make this happen. And it just resulted in some certain character choices happening throughout the film where I was like, since when was that a thing? Like, the whole, you know, becoming a ghost thing. I was just like, Since when? Like, yeah. I wanted more lead up.
No, I'm totally right there with you. And that segment of the movie is honestly where I'm having the most difficulty, you know, saying that I liked it, because that is my biggest hang up with the film is, and now I'm going to try and talk around spoilers, but that whole segment where, the plan is revealed, I guess you could say. I'm like, really? She needed all of those things to work in order for this to be, you know, successful. It's what everybody's problem with Captain America: Civil War and Zemo.
The convoluted plan.
Exactly. The same thing is going on here.
Yeah, and I think that also for me relates to the fact that there's this new character in this film, and it introduces the fact that superpowers exist. I'm like,
oh yeah,
what? Like, since when? Like, this is what I mean. Like, throughout this whole film, I'm like, since when? For so many of the storylines, which is why I was so confused.
Still a better. Still a better Airbender movie than the M. Night one. But yes, I felt the same way. Yeah, I think that's the weakest part of the movie is the Firemaster stuff. And it really feels tacked on.
Kumail, it's like they just wanted Kumail Nanjiani in the movie.
And I get it. Kumail is fun. He's a fun dude, and this character is fun. Mm. It's just kind of distracting from everything else that's going on. And this isn't a new thing. This isn't about, you know, growing up or aging out of a character or whatever. I wasn't a huge necessarily fan of podcast in the first one either. And so to bring like that character back, to bring the Celeste O'Connor character back,
their character, Celeste O'Connor's entire character. Like, even in the first one, it felt like, you know, they were there and then they just so that they could have the full selection of, like, you know, re Ghostbusters, and then they show up in this one and I'm just like, you were so mean to Finn Wolfhard all the first movie and then you just help them. Okay, and now it's like, since when? Sorry, continue your thought.
Well, I think the answer is since Afterlife. I think Ghostbusters Afterlife introduced the idea of moving on, the idea of human ghosts and, you know, what those are as opposed to, you know, beast ghosts and those kind of things. It hasn't cleared it up or anything, but I think the Harold Ramis of the first one was the you know, the big deal. So, yeah. Mm. I will take as much James Acaster as anybody wants to give me anytime. I love James Acaster. Put him in everything. He has such a distinctive voice, and I mean that both literally and figuratively. His comedic voice is very distinctive, as is his actual voice, and I love him so much. His season of Taskmaster may be the best season of Taskmaster. So if you want to check that out.
I feel the same about Patton Oswalt, because I just really like Patton Oswalt. Mm,
who also shows up for a cup of coffee here. So yeah, good to see Patton in this. I think I hear everything you're saying and for the most part agree with it. What I think this movie does well is I think that this movie understands more than any movie since the first one, and I include the second one in this, what made that first one feel fun and special. Like, there is a lightness to this movie. There is a real focus to this movie. It's about a quest, like a specific demon that we're questing about. Afterlife had to do so much heavy lifting with introducing characters and those kind of things that it's almost not really about what it says it's about. And so this one to me felt the most like a Ghostbusters movie. And it was a movie that while it wasn't a home run for me. In fact, like I said, I barely scrape into liked it here. It really gave me hope for this franchise. Because they're not doing something where it's like, oh, we're telling a 4-movie story where we're going to, you know, do this, you know, big thing. It's like, it's like a villain of the week. It's like a monster of the week. Like if you think of it in the X-Files terms, like it's a monster of the week episode. And that, I think, is what this franchise can do really, really well. Some of them will be good. Some of them will be bad. Some of them may be great. I don't know. But I'm excited to see this kind of idea progress. And like I said, I'm on board for this family. I would love to see Paul Rudd and McKenna Grace fight ghosts with any two other people. And these two work just fine. So like... yeah, I'm having
except
fun.
Carrie Coon is like the worst. Like, not
she's
the
not
actress.
A great mom.
I really like Carrie
Coon
as an actress.
Hilarious, mom.
But the character is the worst mom in the first one and in this one. I'm just like, you, like, Paul Rudd's way more of a parent in both of these films than she ever has been. It almost seems like she hates her kids.
I am not the person to draw these kind of lines all the time, but let me say, as a parent, these characters feel
dogs.
Yeah, Aaron,
that portrayal of motherhood is so much more accurate than most of the portrayals you will see. And I think there's a beauty to her frankness with her children that is really interesting to me. And what she's telling Paul in this one is exactly why you like Paul, but she's right. Like, if you are going to be an authority figure in a child's life as they're growing and learning things, it's not about being their friend. It just isn't about being their friend. It is about being an authority figure in their life. And the things they will learn are more from your example, actually, than your rules, probably. But your rules are still important. And so, yeah, the ability to say no, the ability to lay down the law is important. So, yeah, I like what these movies are saying about parenting. And I think Callie would be an amazing mom. So, yeah.
I can't wait. I'll have kids one day, and then I'll be able to be like, as a mom, I'm going to come back. Wait, I'll have one. And then literally it'll have just come out and I'll be like, I just want to reference
now
back.
I have authority.
So
Alice is going to have a spite baby.
No, there is nothing. There is nothing about having a kid or, you know, being in love or whatever the usual, you know, as a father of a daughter or whatever it might be, which I'm not, by the way, I only have sons. You know, there's nothing about that, you know, or not being that eliminates you from understanding something. I don't buy that. You can understand things even that you haven't experienced. In fact, if we're going to be a community and learn from each other, we have to. We have to understand things that we haven't experienced. But on the other side of that is perspective. And I do think that you can have a different perspective based on your experiences. And the experience of being a parent is a very unique experience. And there's something inherently traumatic about it. That is, you know, that responsibility and the weight of that combined with the fact that every single parenting book ever has opposite things to say about what it means to be a good parent. You know, like there is no defined way to do this thing right. And so like it is very complicated.
I
find it interesting that you both found her to be a terrible mom. And I think she's a really fun mom.
No, I think that's a great tagline. Parenting, inherently traumatic.
It is.
But yeah,
because physical level for giving birth and also on a more metaphorical level as they grow up. But yeah.
Yeah. I guess, I think it's just maybe because they're focusing too much on her being the quote unquote, from my perspective, from her being the quote unquote an authority figure and kind of doing that, telling them no. And it just seems like she never has a positive interaction with her kids. And I just want her to have like a moment of connection with either child that isn't just, oh, we're about to die, get behind me. Like that just seems the only time where I'm just like, oh, look, she's being nice to them.
Yeah, that happens after they leave the house. Yeah. There's no positive interaction until they leave the house. I'm kidding. That was a joke. You guys were supposed to laugh at that.
What the house? And I'm like, I was flicking through the film in my brain.
Yeah, really me too.
Oh, no, I'm saying in real life. I'm saying as a parent, You're not allowed to have positive moments with your children until after they leave the house.
Right.
On a serious level, it does happen more after kids move away because they start to realize where the love was shown, even though they didn't see it. Right. Yeah. Or that the things they did were from love, even though they felt bad in the moment, you know, kind of thing. So, but yes, anyhow, welcome back to Sif Pop Parenting podcast where
only one of three of us are qualified.
That's right.
No, Alice, we have dogs. We've already
True. I have dogs. And they are little babies that need lots of love and care. So and
yes. It's exactly the same.
Only yesterday I had to put my whole hand into my dog's mouth and pull out a choc chip cookie he tried to eat. So you know.
Yeah,
it's not all sparkles and rainbows, folks.
Yes, that's good. That's good. Although sparkles and rainbows are fine on a cookie. I don't know that they couldn't be. All right, final thoughts on Ghostbusters: Frozen Empire.
Mid-credit scene.
Yes. Yes.
There is a mid-credit scene. I would say, I think that I'm okay if they want to filter out the old cast a little bit. I don't mind them showing up as cameos, but I think having them be like full on characters, I think it overblows the film too much with too many characters. Having said that, Ernie Hudson looks excellent for a man who is either in his or about to hit his 80s. So that is what I say.
Yeah.
The golden years are treating him well.
My final thought, speaking of aging, is bringing back the mayor character. Huge mistake, in my opinion. Huge mistake. I didn't like it at all. I get what you're trying to do there.
Yeah.
I get you want, you know,
definitely
a Venkman.
Be retired.
Yeah. Look, we live in a real world where let's not talk about the, you know, possible U.S. potential candidates for president of the United States and their relative ages. So I'm not saying it's impossible for a mayor to be old. What I'm saying is for a movie, I think it's the wrong choice to make that happen. And because I think it's distracting, but that may be just me. So I'm sure a lot of people loved it. That is Ghostbusters Frozen Empire. It is also in theaters. Before we head on to the best ever challenge, thank you for being a Sif Pop member. If indeed you are, it is much appreciated. And if you aren't, we appreciate you too. But if you want to check it out, you can go to sifpop.com to do so. It helps with what goes on at the podcast and what goes on at the website. Check that out. Patreon.com/sifpop. Some bonus episodes there at certain levels. Lots of fun stuff that you can check out there. And thank you very much for even considering it. Sif Pop is at Patreon, patreon.com/sifpop. All right, let's do best ever Empire movies. I'm very excited to see
which
ones you've seen. If perhaps one is ahead of another,
Trump!
That will happen. Mm-hmm. I'm going to go last just because I'm the only one with a complete list, apparently. So let's start with Ormsby. What is your number 5?
300, Rise of an Empire.
Trump!
Wow.
Wow.
Alice, what is your number 5?
Okay, listen. Normally when I don't have 5, I'll try and shove like 2 film watches or something just to make up the list because I have 3. But I didn't physically have time for that because I had to watch all the Godzilla films and the Ghostbusters films.
You made me watch 2 entire franchises in 2 days.
Exactly. So the 2 movies I'm about to say for 5 and 4 would be higher on my list, but they don't technically qualify. But they do technically. Sorry, they don't qualify, but they do technically. So you said best films with the word empire in it. You never said it had to have the entirety of the word empire in the film.
Okay.
So my number 5 has
I feel like we're, I feel like we're playing Taskmaster now, and you're thinking laterally.
My number 5 is Me, Myself, and Irene.
Trump! No, I'm just kidding. That was a joke. I just wanted to see the look on your face.
That was great. That was deer in headlight. Like no way.
That was amazing.
So I just had to go into my watch list and type in Aya, and this was the film that showed up that had Aya. This is also not a very... Anyway, I really love Jim Carrey, and Renee Zellweger's really fun, and it is a film I have not seen in probably 20 years, but I remember laughing during it because Jim Carrey. Honestly, it's the Jim Carrey. Like, he's just being hard, hard, hardcore Jim Carrey in this.
I like it. I respect the game. I respect the game. My number five is a movie that came out recently starring Olivia Colman called Empire of Light.
Trump.
There we go. Andrew, you're number four.
This is where I have Empire of Light.
Trump.
Okay. What's your number four, Alice?
So I did the Aya. So we need the first half of the word, which is emp. And that's Emperor's New Groove. Emperor's New Groove.
Yes.
So between
I like
the
this
two
one
of
even
them,
better because an emperor is the same root as empire.
Correct.
So like,
correct. I did try to find movies that had the word emperor in it. And that also was, so I just was like, you know what? Between the two, I have the word empire.
That's right.
There so you do. It works. So Emperor's New Groove is honestly, I think it, it's crazy that it doesn't actually have a written down script because of the chaos of the filming, but it is yet, I think, I want to say it's a perfect movie. Like, it is so not a perfect movie, but it is a perfect movie, if that makes sense. Because I have so much fun watching it. It is, I quote it regularly in my everyday life. Like, every time my voice gets scratchy or I have a cold, I'm like, is that my voice? Or like, you know, there's the whole Kronk meme going around of like, oh yeah, it's all coming together. Like, it's so good. I love this film so much. And
I can't count the number of times I've said wrong lever.
It's so quotable. Eartha Kitt is perfect as
so
Yzma. Like, I think the casting's amazing. I don't know. Do I want this to be remade? Probably not. Like,
perfect.
I think just leave it in animation where it belongs, and I'll just watch it every now and again and have fun.
There you go. Number four is where I have 300 Rise of an Empire. It's not great, but it is a movie with empire in it, and I had fun enough time with it visually. So there you go. 300 Rise of an Empire. What did you have to say about it, Andrew?
Oh, I hate it. Absolutely hate it.
It just has empire.
Absolutely hate it.
It's a good best ever challenge when you got to put movies you hate in your top five.
And I'll go ahead and give you guys my review of Empire of Light. I can't remember a single thing about this movie. Honestly, I know I've seen it. I know I've seen it because I went on a Sam Mendes bend, and I was like, I'm going to try and watch all of his movies. And I remember, oh yeah, that's the one with Olivia Colman. And is it Michael Hurd? Is that the other guy who's in it? I can't remember a single thing about that movie.
Colin Firth's in it.
Yeah, he was the villain, I think.
And there's a pigeon.
So you already remember way more about it than
if
I do.
If you're just joining us, we're in the best ever challenge right now.
It's a pigeon. That should go on the poster.
All right. Let's move on to our number threes. Andrew, what do you got at number three?
Well, I know it's against the rules, but I had to do it just so I could get five. Ghostbusters Frozen Empire.
Oh, okay. Mm. Yeah. It's not necessarily against the rules. It's just something that, you know, we try not to do. But yeah.
Yeah.
I get it. I totally get it.
Yeah, he just reviewed it, so.
There you go.
Please go. Alice, just rewind.
Please move on. Alice, what is your number three?
Hey, these are movies that actually qualify. This is where I have Empire of Light. Because the other two were not going to be number three. So I think Olivia Colman's one of the greatest working actresses right now. I love movies set in movie theaters. I didn't love this movie, but typically I love movies set in movie theaters. I thought this was good, and it has nice cinematography and a story about a pigeon having its wing fixed. And Colin Firth is a massive, you know, ass in this film. There we go. That's what my review.
Complete. A whole one. Yes.
Yeah. Single one.
Yes. I mean, I just echo everything Alice said about this completely mediocre movie that's in our top five. This movie should have been a lot better. It really should have been a lot better. Olivia Colman's great in it. Yeah, she's. Yeah. It's not that she's not good in it. It's not that the performances aren't good. It's just such a mess. It just it feels like it doesn't. It just doesn't find a way to really come together in any, you know, significant, meaningful way. It gets distracted by so many different things. I think
there's three really good stories and they just need to focus on one.
I agree. I agree. Yeah, I think that's what it is. So, yeah, those are my thoughts on Empire of Light. So that would be my number three, I think.
Yeah.
My number three is Empire Records. I don't know if either of you would have that one on your list.
No.
It's funny enough. I mean, it's the '90s, man. Like, you know, it's definitely not going to be the same kind of movie if it's made today, but Liv Tyler is kind of funny in it. You know, Tobey Maguire's in there as well. It kind of wants to be like, High Fidelity, that kind of movie. And it's just not, it's just more of a straight, teen comedy romance kind of thing. It works where it works and it doesn't work where it doesn't work. And more often than not, at the time it worked. Now I haven't seen it in a long time. So there you go. That is Empire Records. All right. On to our number twos. Andrew, what do you got at number two?
At number two, I have Atlantis: Lost Empire.
Trump.
Alice, what do you have at number two?
You might as well just hit the button. It's Empire Strikes Back.
That's we all have different number twos. My number two is Empire of the Sun.
I have seen the first 30 minutes of this, and then I had to stop because we had to record the show.
Did you like? How are you feeling after
the first 30 minutes?
It's going to be a rough movie. I can already tell.
Yes. Yeah. You mean emotionally?
An emotionally rough movie.
Yes. Yeah. It is. I think it's a great movie. I mean, listen, Spielberg.
I'm enjoying it. Don't get me wrong.
Spielberg knows how to make movies for sure. But yeah, it is one of those movies where you watch it and you're just like, wow, okay. But Christian Bale is a kid in this movie. And and it's really interesting to see.
Was he a child actor?
Yeah.
Oh, yes.
In this movie.
Mm. I think he was he looks like he's about 8 or 9 in this.
Mm. Yeah. John Malkovich is great in it. Ben Stiller's in this movie, too, which surprised me the first time I watched it. But yeah, it's good stuff. Empire of the Sun is my number two. All right, our number ones, which, Andrew, I think we probably share our number one.
Yep, Empire Strikes Back.
Alice had it at number two. Go ahead, talk on it, Andrew. What is this this movie, Empire Strikes Back?
So there's this film series called Star Wars.
Sounds interesting.
No,
tell me about these celestial battles.
These celestial battles that take place in the nether above us. Yeah, it's great. I absolutely love Empire Strikes Back. It's my favorite Star Wars movie. Although, man, every single time I watch Rogue One, that movie keeps going up and up on my on my list.
You mispronounced Last Jedi, but that's fine. Go ahead.
Yeah, I was going to say, I think Last Jedi just edges it for me, personally.
People are gross. But, it's been about a year since I've seen this now. I probably should go back and watch it again.
Empire Strikes Back is phenomenal. It's so good. Really an interesting way to make a sequel to such a popcorn flick, too. You know, like it doesn't have the same feel as the first one. It's a lot more down than the first one, a little more dour. It doesn't have a happy ending necessarily. Like it's but it does feel like a complete film. You know, there's definitely a through line through the movie. It doesn't feel like part of a movie or anything. So yeah, it's really great stuff. I love Empire Strikes Back. Alice, you added a number two. Any other thoughts? Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I would say, you know how this one doesn't have a happy ending, and yet you said it's still a complete movie. I would say that's the same as Dune 2. So just responding to the podcast from a couple weeks ago, which just also
had,
doesn't
just had
have
to respond to a podcast. I was yelling at my phone when I was listening to it.
where it can have an upsetting ending and still be a complete movie. Anyway, Empire Strikes Back is very good. I know that's a hot take, everybody, but can recommend, although I do really like Last Jedi as well, and it's probably my favorite. I just had to get it in there one more time. Empire Strikes Back.
Thumbs up. All right.
What's your number one?
Alice, tell us why Atlantis is your number one movie.
I mean, look, when was the last time I saw this movie? 20 years ago? Yes. However, it was very affecting. I really need to rewatch it, but I loved this film as a kid. It was one of those films that I like wore out the VHS on because I watched it so many times.
Nice.
And I had like a doll of, Kira, and like I had my own necklace, and Milo is like one of the, this is one's for the girlies especially. He's like one of the low key sexiest Disney main characters. Like I love Atlantis so much. Yeah, but he's got other facets of his personality. And you know what? Speaking of Disney reimaginings, I feel like this is one that actually could potentially really do well as a reimagining because it didn't get its, like, I don't think it got as much of success as it could have gotten when it came out. And I think the story's really cool and the characters are really cool. And I think they would translate really well for a modern audience, especially if you cast, you know, ethnicity accurate, as you should. And I think it's such an interesting story about, you know, exploration and curiosity and about how sometimes just because something is possible doesn't mean it's right. And yeah, I just also think the villains have a lot of dimension to them as well. I also had like little figurines of all of them. So growing up, and the ship as well was really cool. I just think it's a really cool design too. Like, it's very different to other Disney films. So yeah, I really love Atlantis, The Lost Empire. And yeah, if you haven't seen it in 20 years, like I haven't, I recommend going back and rewatching it. Like I will be, because I feel like it's definitely worth it.
Very nice. That was my number six. That was my honorable mention, was Atlantis, The Lost Empire. And it tells you what I think about that movie, that I had Empire of Light and 300 Rise of an Empire above it.
Wow.
Rude. That movie did not do much for me at all. Mm. I was completely blind to the wiles and sexuality of the main character. I
Milo?
Milo did not strike me in that way whatsoever. So I apologize
for being
blind to it. So there you go. There is the best ever challenge. Did you throw things out this week to the gurus, Andrew, to see what they had to say about Empire movies?
Sure did.
Could they come up with three?
They came up with three. So coming in at number three, we have Empire of the Sun.
Mm-hmm.
Number two, Empire Records. And then, no surprise here, number one, Empire Strikes Back.
There you go. There you go. That was basically my top three, except I guess Empire of the Sun and Empire Records were switched. That's interesting they had Empire Records above Empire of the Sun.
So, yeah, a lot of people showed a lot of love for it in the polls.
I'll have to go back and watch it. Maybe it holds up pretty well. I don't know. It's been forever since I've seen that movie. There you go. There's the best ever challenge. That means we're going to finish it up with our buried treasure. What is that one thing in any area of pop culture you want to make sure people know about? Alice, you're our guest, so you'll go last. I'll kick us off. I recently finally had a conversation with myself, with my significant other, and we decided it was okay for me to get the Criterion Channel. So I subbed to the Criterion Channel. And man, is that a treasure trove of classic movies and cool stuff. I watched a movie called Les Samurai. This is from the 60s, I believe 1967. I highly encourage you to look it up. It is not a samurai film. So I'll go ahead and tell you that it is a hired gun film, and it has one of the coolest central characters I've ever seen. It's a very intricate, interesting cat and mouse kind of game. I believe it is in French, which you might have guessed by the title, since it's not The Samurai, it's Le Samurai. And so, yeah, it's a Jean-Pierre Melville film, and it is 1967. And I highly recommend it. It is really, really good. So I wanted to throw that out here for my buried treasure. Andrew, what do you got?
So we talked about a talking monkey today on the podcast.
Several of them, so. In fact.
Yes. We're going to continue to talk about them because I just rewatched the Planet of the Apes trilogy again. The one that I'm going to talk about is Dawn of the Planet of the Apes, the second one, just because I think that that's my favorite of the current trilogy. I know there's a fourth one coming out, which Aaron looks really good.
I'm very worried about it because Wes Ball is directing it and he did the Maze Runner movies and they are not good.
The first one's pretty good. You didn't like the first Maze Runner?
It was fine. Like, it was fine.
I genuinely like the first Maze Runner.
I do too.
I think it was good. I also am a book reader though. Like, I read the book and they just, it was good. And then they just completely.
A what reader? What is this thing you're talking about?
There's these things and they have words on them.
I don't believe you.
And you picture the things in your mind rather than have them on the screen.
That just sounds like silliness.
Way too much work.
Anyway, but then it just kind of diverges completely at the end, which results in the atrocities that are the following films. Anyway. Continue, Andrew.
Well, I'm just worried. The reason why I wanted to talk about Dawn of the Planet of the Apes as opposed to either Rise or War is because I think that Koba, Toby Kebbell's character, is like one of the most underappreciated villains in cinematic history. The journey that we see him go on in Rise and then what happens to him in Dawn of the Planet of the Apes, I was blown away a second time viewing it with fresher eyes, because there's scenes with him and Andy Serkis where the main premise of the movie is humans want to build fix a power plant so that they can get lights back on in the cities, and the apes live in the woods where the power plant is, so there's kind of tension there, and they're talking about human work being done, and Koba just keeps pointing to himself, his scars all over him. He goes, "This is human work. This is human work." And it just really hit me hard. Like, I was like, wow, what a beautifully written character. Oh, yeah. So if you haven't seen the new Planet of the Apes franchise that's happening right now, I can't recommend it enough. I don't know about the two of you. I'm pretty sure you two love it as well.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah.
Mm-hmm.
High recommend checking it out.
Yep.
Good stuff. Looks like those are on Max if you want to check them out there. Alice, what is your buried treasure?
So also really quick, I recently rewatched The Batman and I watched all the special features on the Blu-ray, and Matt Reeves does not look how I pictured him. He kind of gives me Ned Flanders vibes, which was very surprising. But that also, on that note, like, very good storyteller. Anyway, that's not my buried treasure. My buried treasure, I could not for the life of me remember if someone's talked about this on the podcast recently, so let me know. But I want to shout my absolute adoration for Hazbin Hotel on Amazon Prime. Because I think it is such a great exercise in how, A, animation is not just for kids, and B, the musicals are really awesome. And see, the original storytelling, like, it's so original, it's so different, and it's a passion project that basically, like, they released the pilot on YouTube and it got 95 million views or something, so that Amazon saw that and was like, hey, do you want to make at least 2 seasons of this story? And they got basically every single voice actor is a person who currently works on Broadway. And so that's why all the singing is absolutely amazing. And the story is basically about Charlie, who's the daughter of Lucifer Morningstar and the Princess of Hell, who, to avoid a annual extermination of hell by heaven to ensure that hell never rises up, she decides to open up a hotel called the Hazbin Hotel to try and, instead of having to give an alternate solution where souls can come to the hotel and be redeemed, and so therefore that's how the numbers can be kind of petered out in hell rather than be exterminated every year. And it's, yeah, like I said, it's a great exercise in the fact that A, animation can be for adults, but also it can be really fun and original and wacky and different. And it's like 8 episodes, 20 something minutes each. With the soundtrack is so good. It is like, I've had it on repeat for like over a month now, and it's insanely amazing. But yeah, I can strongly recommend. And it's definitely getting a season two at least. So
yeah,
definitely worth it.
Very cool. That is Hazbin, Hazbin Hotel, not HAS space.
Oh, yeah. Were you like, I can't find it anymore?
I was like, oh, is this a reality show about, you know, like former stars and they all hang out at this hotel together? Sounds like a show I'd love.
No, sure, there's some C celebrities making some cameos in the show. Have you watched Hell of a Boss yet?
No, I haven't. I haven't, but I've like, I feel like I probably should in my wait for the next season from what I've heard.
You would love it. It's obviously it's the same people.
Yeah.
Very, very cool. That is Hazbin Hotel on Prime. Dawn of the Planet of the Apes is on Max, and Le Samurai is in the Criterion Collection. We did it, guys. We managed to do so much podcasting. I believe we can now call ourselves a podcasting empire. I believe that is that is possible now. Thank you so much for joining us today for Sif Pop. It is part of the Studio DNA Podcast Network. You can find out more about other shows on the network at studiodna.media or by searching Studio DNA in your podcast player. Huge thanks to Andrew for hanging out again today.
Thank you, buddy.
Big thanks to producer Phil for producing the audio and video show.
Thanks, Phil.
And thank you to Alice McKelly for hanging out with us today. Alice, where do you want to send people to find your stuff?
Like always, I'm a writer for SifPop.com. My next review is going to be for the Halo season 2, or season 2 of the Halo show, I should say. So look out for that. And then you can find me on Letterboxd and Instagram at Ali G Mick, A-L-I-G-M-I-C-H, where I review and make lists and look at things. So you can come talk to me there.
If you would like to see Alice review and make lists and look at things, yes, find her at Ali G Mick on the different platforms. And Mick, by the way, M-I-C-H or M-I-C-H, as Alice might say. Thank you, Alice, for hanging out with us again today. We always love having you here.
Anytime.
Thank you to our SifPop members for supporting this. Support starts at $3 a month. You can check all that out at patreon.com/SifPop. There are lots of ways to connect with us. You can leave a comment, a rating, or a review. You can do that at Apple Podcasts or Spotify or wherever you listen. If you want to email us, you can do that too. That's feedback@sifpop.com. And finally, if you're having a good time, your movie-loving friends will probably like this show too. So make sure you let them know about it and that listening is much easier than fighting over the Titan remote control with Kong. We will be back next week with more. I'm not sure exactly what we'll be reviewing next week, but we will see you then. Bye.
Bye.
Sick of being upsold at gyms?
My guy, you're currently a base member. For $90 more, I can upgrade you to our Shred membership. For $130 more, you'll be a Swole member. And for just $300 more, you'll reach Sweat Platinum.
At Planet Fitness, you'll get energy without the upsell. Never pushy, always free fitness training and equipment for every workout. It's fitness that fits your budget. Join Planet Fitness for just $1 down and $10 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends Friday, May 10th. See Home Club for details.